It's my great pleasure to introduce Dr. Geraldine Dawson, who's the Chief Scientific Officer of Autism Speaks. And she's going to update us on the Autism Speaks scientific program. Of course, we all know that Jerry Dawson is, but certainly was, a scientific leader in the field when she was directing the Autism Center and this absolutely phenomenal path-breaking program at University of Washington. And many of us were surprised that she would leave, being at the top of the field to go take on a job leading us, Autism Speaks Science. And it's turned out to be, now I see why, it's turned out to be an absolutely phenomenal entity. And and her leadership has gone from leading us at scientific meetings to leading everybody now, the parents, the scientists, everybody. And so it's really a remarkable transition in a way, and that's why she's been called a rock star of science. And I'm surprised she didn't bring up her bass guitar, but you should see her play that. And also, she's the author of a new book that's out and back from Oxford University Press. Please all go see that. Anyway, it's my great pleasure to introduce Jerry, who's going to update us on the Autism Speaks scientific program.
Thank you, Dan. Before I begin, I just wanted to remind people that there is a stakeholders networking luncheon that's going to be held today. We're sponsoring this, Autism Speaks, and this is for families and for individuals on the spectrum that would like to get together and network, talk, and maybe discuss what you think about the meeting. And so this is going to be from 11:45 to 1. There's no invitation meeting are needed. You can just show up and there'll be lunch for you. And the room is Betsy AB. So think about attending that. Wow, 10 years. This is amazing. It's so great to be up here and to think about that we have a decade of MFAR and to watch how MFAR has grown over the last decade. So I'm just honored to be here and talk about Autism Speaks. I do want to thank Dan Geschwin and Laura Schreibman for putting together what is a phenomenal program. It's amazing also to just see how the quality and the diversity of research has grown over the last 10 years. So wonderful job, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to quickly update you about the science program at Autism Speaks. I wanted to begin by featuring the science team at Autism Speaks. We have four vice presidents. Many of you know these folks. Clara Lajon-Cher, vice president of clinical programs. Rob Ring has just joined us as vice president of translational research. Andy Scheer, who is vice president of scientific affairs. And Anita Miller-Sostick, who oversees scientific review and operations. And then a whole, we have about 40 people in the science program, and you can see here listed also many of our directors that oversee many of the different components that comprise the program. Now, our strategic goals are first to discover genetic and environmental risk factors that can inform detection, treatment, and prevention, and then to translate biological findings into clinically useful tools for early detection and treatment. And we also want to be focusing on developing behavioral and biomedical treatments that could be of immediate benefit to people with autism throughout the lifespan. So early intervention, school age, adolescence, adulthood. And then finally, as we develop empirically validated methods, we haven't done our job until we've disseminated those methods out into the community, into the hands of the practitioners. So dissemination and implementation science is also an aspect of our goals. And we fund research across the broad span from very basic research on risk factors and biological mechanisms to translational research and then on through dissemination into the community. Now, to develop a strategic plan, we have met with many scientific advisors, many stakeholders from the community, to form what are our priorities. And then based on those priorities, we provide grant funding to many of you probably in this room. But part of that strategic plan processing is to evaluate, was it useful? Did we get the outcomes that we expected from these grants? And how would you assess the outcomes? And it turns out that we don't have any off-the-shelf methods for querying investigators about what they actually found, what impact it had, how they communicated the information to the public. So this year, we designed our own custom-designed web-based outcome assessment tool, where every grantee at the end of their grant is queried about what did they find? Did they actually discover what they thought that they would discover? Did they disseminate their findings? Did they just choose to stay in the field? Did they use this data to get additional funding? And then we started this process of looking at outcome assessments by examining our first 107 grants that have been completed since the inception of Autism Speaks in 2005. So I'm going to show you some of those outcome analyses, and these are from grants that were distributed in about 2005 and 2006. Now, we had an excellent response rate. About 94% of the investigators filled out the survey, and the other 6% we're going to find while we're here at MFAR and make sure that that you fill it out. So first of all, what did the investigators discover? You can see that about 44% of these grants were focused on discovering a biological mechanism or biomarker. 22% were discovered either a new diagnostic or screening or subtyping tool. 9% were focused on new technologies and methods. 8% on environmental risk factors or gene-by-environment interactions. 8% on developing a new treatment. 4% on genetic risk factors, and then followed by prevalence estimate, and then a very few on dissemination methods. So you can see that we, you know, how we're distributing the kind of impact that we're having, and it allows us then to think about where we might need to be adding funding in order to perhaps adjust this distribution. This is a slide really near and dear to my heart because this was an assessment of the impact of our predoctoral and postdoctoral fellowships on early scientists. And what we found was that over 85% of the time, the fellowship was the fellow's first research project related to autism. And over 95% of the time, the fellows are choosing to stay in the field, and 100% of the time, they said that the fellowship was instrumental. So I do think fellowships are an extremely good investment in bringing new talent into the field. In terms of communicating the results to the public, there were over 1,000 ways in which these results were communicated, close to 200 peer-reviewed scientific journals. And then this is another favorite slide of mine. So these first 107 grants was based on over $9 million of research money that was given to investigators. So then we looked at if they used the data to apply for a grant and get extra funding, and we found that we had leveraged close to $100 million based on the $9 million that we invested. So it's about 10 to 1 return on our investment, and that's fantastic. All right, so looking forward, each year we define what are our targeted research emphasis areas, and I want to quickly run through what those are at this time. First is to discover and characterize risk factors for autism, and with a particular emphasis at this point on environmental risk factors and mechanisms for gene-environment interactions, such as epigenetic mechanisms, the development of very early methods of detection of autism. The next is to understand factors that influence the quality of life for adults with autism. We know this is a very underfunded research, and yet this is a great area of need. So emphasizing things like interventions, treatments, functional outcomes, medical comorbidities, and mortality. Because we do know mortality rates are much higher than the general population for adults. Why? Is this something where we could actually intervene and reduce mortality rates? The next is to identify the molecular pathophysiology of autism that can inform translational research for drug discovery or development of new diagnostic methods. and then to develop and evaluate novel treatments, not only for the core symptoms of autism, but for the associated symptoms such as sleep and GI and anxiety throughout the lifespan. And then finally, to disseminate empirically validated clinical services to community settings, particularly in underserved populations. Now, we have two kinds of research funding that we give. Some of it is investigator initiative, where people come to us with new ideas, and then we determine whether that idea is worthy of funding. But we also have what we call initiatives, networks, resources. These are activities that Autism Speaks is proactively funding. And you can see that that kind of funding is distributed about half and half. And in terms of our initiative and resources, we have about five that are focused on basic risk factors and biological mechanisms, and we have about five that are focused on treatment and dissemination. So I'm going to end by just giving you a few highlights of those initiatives and resources. So I want to begin with the Autism Genome Project. We see this as a tremendous success. About a year ago, we estimated that we had put maybe about $8 to $9 million into this, and at that time had already leveraged $32 million through NIH funding that is using the Autism Genome Project resources. This is the world's largest international autism genetics consortium, 110 scientists from 50 institutions, 11 countries. They've now published over 200 papers. The focus now is on translating some of the phenomenal genetic discoveries that have been made by the AGP into risk assessment tools and focused on new next-generation sequencing techniques. Currently, there are over 3,000 families that are part of the Autism Genome Project database, and last year, their paper that I'm showing here was highlighted both by Autism Speaks and by the NIH as one of the most important scientific advances of 2010. A sister program is AGRI, another one of our, I think, amazing kind of feathers in our cap, so to speak, and this is a program overseen by Clara LaJonchere. This is the largest private genetic database for autism, with over 2,400 families involved, 10,000 DNA cell lines. It supports seven federal grants. It's involved in 12 major grant collaborations, and right now over 300 researchers are using the resource. The other thing that Clara and her team have done is to help initiate a new consortium. It's called the Autism Informatics Consortium, which is a collaboration among the Simons Foundation, INDAR, and Autism Speaks, where we're looking at how we can pull together the data from those three resources and also develop standards for the field about data sharing and methods of data collection that will optimize data sharing. The Autism Tissue Program, another very important program where it's focused on the collection of brain tissue. We're also involved in some collection of stem cells as well now. There are over 157 brains in this registry. There are 6,000 individuals now who carry a card that says, if I have an accident and unfortunately there is a death, that I will donate my brain, you know, to the Autism Tissue Program. So a very active recruitment process. And we also provide a web-based portal that lists all of the autism brains, not only in our tissue bank, but in other tissue banks throughout the world. Alicia Halliday and Cindy Lawler, and Cindy's from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, have created an environmental and epidemiology research network. This is bringing together many researchers across the world who are studying environmental risk factors, particularly from an epidemiological perspective, with the goal of bringing together many of these data sets to have a more powerful method for looking particularly at rare exposures and rare toxins and other kinds of early risk environmental risk factors that may contribute to autism. There are over 20 epidemiological projects that are involved in this that represents over 10,000 data points on people with autism. The Infant Siblings Research Consortium is a collaboration among 25 investigators at 21 sites. And the goal here was to bring together the many researchers now who are studying high-risk infants. These are infants who are at risk because they have an older sibling who are often being followed prospectively. And we know that the risk rate is somewhere between 15 and 20%. And so to have power to be able to understand things like recurrence rates and understand early patterns of development, we felt that it was important to bring together all of these studies. So now there are currently over 3,000 high-risk siblings that we have funded a common database to put together all of that information, and they have been involved in a number of collaborative projects, both scientific as well as policy formation, and it's been extremely successful. We're currently seeking funding and collaborations from ourselves and other organizations to be able to collect DNA on all of these infants as well. Over the last year, we have launched a new translational research initiative and brought Rob Ring in to head up that initiative. And this will be very exciting to see as we move forward the new developments in this area. But the goal is to accelerate the development of novel diagnostics and drugs that can improve early detection and ameliorate both core and associated symptoms. So this will be focused on promising drug targets, validating animal models, looking for biomarkers, and refining our clinical trial endpoints. What you'll see us doing more now is establishing partnerships between or among the NIH, the industry, and Autism Speaks, where we'll be working together to accelerate drug discovery that could be of a benefit to people with autism. We launched this year a new postdoctoral fellowship program, which is part of this, which is a translational research postdoctoral fellowship program. The Autism Treatment Network, this is again part of Clara LaChanchere's portfolio, is a network of 17 academic medical centers. We fund this at the level of about $3.5 million annually, where these academic centers are serving clinically children with autism. And in fact, over 22,000 children are served through this network. The focus of this network is on improving the quality of medical care for children with autism by identifying associated medical condition, developing standards of medical care, developing empirically based guidelines, providing physician training and toolkits. In addition, it has a common patient registry, so all of the children who come in through the ATN centers are evaluated with a common protocol, and that information is put into a central database so that we can track how many symptoms of certain kinds are showing up, how many conditions, what treatments are working, and so forth. So there are over 3,000 children now in the patient registry, and this has become a platform for the conducting clinical trials and other kind of clinical research. And there's 930 children in the ATN that are part of research studies that the ATN researchers are doing. We recently were able to secure funding from the NIH to develop a biorepository for the patients who are put into the patient registry. And, of course, this will make it a much more powerful resource moving forward. Our Global Autism Public Health Initiative, which is overseen by Andy Scheer, Michael Rosenoff, and Simon Wallace, is a focus on addressing the challenge of autism, not only here in the United States, but worldwide. And we do see as our mission as being a global mission, not just a national mission. And so we're reaching out to establish collaborations with countries throughout the world. And these are focused on epidemiological studies. We're focusing on helping countries develop awareness by leveraging some of our awareness tools, by enhancing research capacity and forming research collaborations, and helping to develop services in low-resource countries. So we have over 23 countries now that we have formed partnerships with through the Global Autism Public Health Initiative. And then finally, last but certainly not least, I wanted to mention our Innovative Technology for Autism Initiative that is overseen by Simon Wallace. And this is an initiative that's focused on how we can use the power of technology to develop new tools for people with autism, for communication, for self-management, for developing skills of a wide range of types. And What we did this year was to sponsor a design competition that was designed to bring in people outside the field of autism that are in the area of information technology development to begin to create new designs for these tools. We had a wonderful jury that was comprised of both people with autism, so Temple Grandin was on the jury, and John Elder Robinson, as well as people in information technology and scientists. And so today there'll be a demonstration of a wide range of technologies that, people are developing now. People with autism will be there using them, and families. This is sponsored from 8:30 to 1 today, and at about 11:30 we'll be giving out our awards for the top three new designs in this new area of technology. So I want to end by thanking two groups of people that are so important to us. One is many of you in this audience. There are so many scientists and other community activists who spend their time for free volunteering to help and guide our mission. And we appreciate all the people that do reviews and are on our advisory panels. And so thank you for your generosity. And, of course, I want to thank the families, because all of these things we're doing is because a family decided to donate and that they wanted to give of themselves in order to help others. And I think that's just a wonderful thing, and we want to really acknowledge that. If you're interested in seeing our strategic plan, you can find it on our website. We update it every year, and that'll give you a more fleshed out version of what we're doing. So I'll end there, and I know you're all eager to hear Eric talk. So thank you very, very much.